It is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. David is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. He has his own website, themediabeat.us, and we're privileged to have him join us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast on the weekend and next week, and we say good morning to David Tarachuk. David, good morning.
Well, it's good to be with you again. I'm actually coming in to you from Florida. I'm on my way back from that assignment I was on in my old home country of Britain, where things are interestingly hot and bubbling politically, though not necessarily more hot and bubbling than back here in the States. I've actually come via Florida, so I'm part way home at least, but I'm back on in the good old U.S. of A.
Well, we have to, seeing as you are over there, we have to start with what happened at the summit, even though they didn't want to call it a summit because they didn't want to have a communique at the end that the president wouldn't sign on. But still, it was a summit.
Behavior which he has been known to indulge in before, yes, at various international gatherings. Yeah, it was meant to be a NATO summit. All the leaders of NATO were there, but they decided not to call it a summit so they wouldn't fall into these embarrassing traps at the end of the day. But there were embarrassments all the same.
I say they didn't have to wait till the end this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, now, I had mixed feelings. When I saw the videotape of the young, and I use the term young in quotes as compared to normal, when you think of looking at European leaders, you're thinking of looking like Angela Merkel, you know, people that have been around a long time. But you look really basically...
Or indeed the current raft of contenders for the presidency in 2020 here.
There you go. So you're looking at a bunch of younger leaders. And, of course, they are joking about, they're not mocking, but they are joking about the circumstances around the President of the United States. And I had two separate feelings about it. I said, well, you know, the feeling I have nowadays is that wherever you are, just always think that what you do is going to wind up on the internet, because with the sophistication of today's phones and everything like that and the ability of the microphones and stuff, nothing you do really can be considered private anymore. So that was...
Absolutely. And in this case, there was, as of course there would be, there was a member of the Canadian Broadcasting Commission... the Canadian Broadcasting Commission's staff, of whom there were many, and of whom some were shadowing the Canadian Prime Minister pretty damn closely, as they would. And of course,
I was just saying that there was a member of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation on hand, not surprisingly, shadowing very closely Mr. Trudeau, the young, as you say, Prime Minister of Canada, as they would, and of course trying to shadow him pretty damn close, and got access to this material, this hot mic material. And as you say, you know, it is at our peril that we behave in a way that we wouldn't want to be on national television. And, of course, these national leaders, including Boris Johnson, by the way, bouncing up and down like he was on a spring, chattering away with the other leaders. And it was not vicious kind of satirical humor at the president's expense, but it was not favorable. and that was pretty damn clear. And of course, our president, who seems to have the very opposite of a thick skin, when he saw it, he was upset enough to cancel his press conference and go home early. And the Brits are just a little nonplussed by his behavior, but on the other hand, they've seen it before. And in a way, people just took it as, certainly the British media took it as just another example of a petulant child who happens to be the president of the free world.
You know, the interesting thing about this is that we have had weak American leaders in the past, okay? Jimmy Carter, when he was president, was not a strong president, but still He was given respect wherever he went. This is the first time in my lifetime, and I have lived through the presidencies of, Dwight Eisenhower, John Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, right on up. And there's always been a certain amount of respect that's been afforded the president of the United States, especially to the allies, not necessarily to people when they visit countries that we're not allied with. But it wasn't mean what they did, but what it showed is there is so little respect for the presidency of the United States right now.
Not surprisingly, the media have been digging up, and it's not hard to do it, all the quotations from Trump himself from 2014, 2015, as he was gathering up his effort to run for president himself, where he said that the American president, meaning President Barack Obama, of course, at the time, was getting no respect around the world, and that people were laughing at us, was what he said. And that's what we don't want. What have we got now? The president's almost 3 years into his presidency, and indeed, at the highest levels, people are laughing at this president. It must be very irksome for him, but of course, it's more serious for the nation as a whole in terms of what position we do take in regard to the rest of the world.
Well, now you
and how much leadership we are able to exert.
I think what people can realize now, even if they're Trump supporters, is why our network of incredibly talented diplomats in the diplomatic corps and in the international section of our country are just flabbergasted, because the lack of respect for the president sooner or later goes down to all these diplomats and all these other people that we have placed in all these other countries, where people look at them and say, I don't know whether I can believe what you're saying comes from the president or not.
Sure, and on a practical level and much more serious level, we get it working out in instances like the president's sudden decision to pull out of northern Syria, or at least pull a certain number of troops out of of Syria, and thereby green lighting an invasion by Turkey, with all horrible consequences of that. But that happened. People are confused about what the United States is doing, and they certainly don't have an awful lot of respect, or indeed, still less in instances like that, any fear of consequences for what they do, because it might, result in some form of punishment from the United States, which used to be a very serious sanction in the world. If America was going to take a firm line with another country, that other country would feel it. That doesn't happen now, not even in Iran, despite all the hot and bothered huffing and puffing from the president and the White House. Same goes for North Korea, and it would appear to be going for China as well in a big confrontation over trade.
Yeah, then when you switch back to the good old United States itself, and you go to the Capitol, and both parties are sucked into this. One party trying to defend their president, and another party trying to point out that the president has done things that go contrary to the office of the president. And I'm putting it that way because I'm not saying necessarily illegal, but when you look at the history of the presidency of the United States, what's expected, what's not expected, and what the rules of impeachment are, this does raise itself to be investigated, and it even makes us look weaker as a country when you see how divided we are as a country politically.
Looking at the country from outside, as I've been doing, and discussing it with members of what the British themselves still call the establishment. I mean, off the record discussions I was having with people in and around government, there's been an interesting idea starting to take some currency, It's a suggestion from the Brits for what Congress might do in this difficult situation at the moment, and very embarrassing situation for for the institutions of government, and indeed for the country's position in the world. And that's something that was tried but didn't work before. But nonetheless, the British think it might be worth trying, and it's in the great tradition of British compromises, I suppose. It was an idea that was tried out and didn't work ahead of Bill Clinton being impeached in 1998. Do you remember that former presidents, a bipartisan approach by President Ford, Republican, and President Carter, Democratic, that Congress should try something a little clever, which was to stop short of impeachment. And instead of voting for impeachment in the House and then sending it for trial in the Senate, simply stop there and very seriously censure the president, not impeach him, censure him, which might, they thought, and it might have had a good chance of success, that you would get some of the president's side going over to the opposing side, in the House, at least, and that would be a very clear signal to the country that Congress was actively disapproving of the conduct of the president, but not going into the kind of protracted battle that you would see in the Senate, which of course would be in our case now would certainly be a foregone conclusion, and that he wouldn't be impeached. He wouldn't be found guilty, rather, of the impeachment charges. It's an interesting idea. I don't know how much. I wonder how much the Brits who are suggesting it now are taking into account the sheer bitterness, partisan bitterness in Congress. And even though people might be grateful for the chance of going not as far as the extreme of impeaching him and trying and failing to find him guilty, that this would be some kind of halfway house that could be settled upon. It's probably not a strong starter, but it's a suggestion from some constitutional experts who know what they thought they would do if they were in the same position. But of course the Brits are not, and they have a very different democratic tradition from the United States.
Well, it's not going to happen in the House. The only way it could possibly happen, a censure could come up where it might happen, because a censure, if it was brought up as a different piece of legislation, I think would only require 51 votes. And
you probably
could get enough Republicans to slide over to approve censure. But Mitch McConnell's not going to allow that to happen. I think Mitch McConnell is, and the Senate, most of the Senate, and if not 99% of the Republicans in the House, just will back this president no matter what. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Yes, he's going to be impeached. Yes, the 99.9% probability the impeachment will be dismissed by the Senate. But the one thing about impeaching a president, I mean, when you think of Bill Clinton nowadays, I think Bill Clinton will still go down as a successful president. But he's a man who was disbarred, who went through the embarrassment, and will always have on his record that impeachment, whether or not it was followed through on or not. That's always, when you speak about Bill Clinton as president, impeachment and that horrible episode always comes up. And that will have
a very hefty asterisk against his name. Yes, absolutely.
And that's what will happen to Donald Trump. It will just signify that his presidency had this happen during it. So that's why I think that going the whole route of impeachment, even though you are not going to get the conviction in the Senate, you've got to stand up so other presidents in the future will realize, do I go down this road or do I not go down this road? The president of the United States has decided to go down a road which is basically obstructionist, not letting any people or any papers or documents come through over executive privilege. And so
Yeah, and don't forget, of course, that he decided to go down the road of pursuing his own personal interests, personal political interests, through a mechanism only open to him because he was the president of the United States, a clear transgression of his oath of office. You make a decision when you decide to go in that kind of direction. And of course, the doubling down on it and making sure that no cooperation with Congress is allowed for anyone involved in the administration is one way of underlining that. And if anything, it's going to make the impeachment process all the more determined to get as far at least as it can.
You know, there is one thing that the press isn't covering that they've covered it very weakly, which could blow a hole in this whole thing, and that is, I do believe the president has made a mistake by immediately going to the Supreme Court about his bank records, because if the Supreme Court does take that up on an emergency, as a direct request from the president, and that turns out not well for him, where his financial records will be released. That's one thing that could blow a hole in this whole thing, that could blow this whole thing sky high. I'm surprised that he's requesting it because, he could just wait for everything to work out and then once again have the Justice Department request it. But it's going to be very very interesting to see what happens over the next 30 days. I mean, the next 30 days...
Raising the question there about, how wise is that for the president to be doing, it suggests that, he's a man who works tactically. It seems that he can be very erratic, even if he's very determined. And dealing with the case running through the courts of law at the moment and ending up, as you say, in the Supreme Court, is an opportunity to be tactical if you want to be. And as you say, he could just run out the clock on it to some degree. But that doesn't appear to be in his nature. And in this case, as in so many cases, he's acting like his own worst enemy, or as Pelosi might say, not while she's still around.
people just don't have great memories, David, because if you go back to the Gore-Bush election, the Supreme Court took this as an emergency thing, a ruling, and they acted on it very quickly about whether or not the vote counting can continue. So the Supreme Court can take the president's request very quickly, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that has any bearing in what's going on. It's just
we might see absolutely the truth of the president's financial dealings, and that I'm sure will have an effect on the overall pursuit of his malfeasance, his alleged malfeasance in the impeachment process. Yes, it's bound to, isn't it?
All I can tell you is I've been active in following politics basically since Robert Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy caught my attention many, many years ago as a high school student. And I can tell you, I don't ever remember, even during the civil rights crisis, and I know it was horrible, but at least during the civil rights crisis, you knew there was a right side and a wrong side. There was a right side of history and a wrong side of history. And it hasn't won out completely, but at least the right side of history has moved the country further along than it would have without some very brave African-Americans basically giving up their lives to move that forward. But this is a stain on America, what's going on right now, which is going to take, and I hate to quote Joe Biden, but he's but it's true, it's a stain that is going to take a long time to get rid of.
Yeah, and many people would argue, with some cause, I think, that the whole Trump era is a kind of retrogression back against that overall movement of progressiveness that you described taking place through all the pain of the 60s and all the viciousness of that period, but at least advancement of a kind, of a very substantial kind, socially, was achieved. Many people see the Trump era having taken place at all as being some kind of backlash against that. I'm not sure if I go all the way with that argument, but It may be a case of the pendulum swinging, and an impeachment of this president might be one way of marking the extent of that swing.
All right, and just very quickly before we wrap up, what's going on with Hong Kong? It's because we've been had nothing but impeachment and the president and the European allies. Where do things stand in Hong Kong right now? Because
you've got a very solid now expression of popular support, not just the hundreds of thousands on occasions close to a million people coming out in the streets against the Beijing-appointed leadership of Hong Kong, but you have now an electoral gauge of public opinion. The local elections that took place last week show, you know, an absolute denunciation of the leader, Carrie Lam, who is, of course, a puppet of Beijing. And we've now got a situation where we're in a kind of standoff. It's a kind of a lockdown almost. But it's very, very clear that there's only one thing retaining Carrie Lam in power against all the protesters, and that is the power of communist China itself. So, you know, watch this space. It's going to get worse.
And we'll wrap things up. And I say this, vive la France. God bless the French. Their boycott and they're shutting down.
What, the protests?
The protests. They succeeded years ago. I think they're going to succeed again. The people are extremely united against the changes that Macron wants to make.
Yeah,
and Macron is equally determined not to go that way.
Yeah.
But there again, watch this space. Who knows who's going to win there?
Yeah, and once again, I just think that flashing round and round and round, just pictures of clash, 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 doesn't do much for people's ability to think.
And it all plays into the Russian agenda, because if you look at the supposed United States, Europe, and stuff like that,
They've been doing this for 20 years. They're trying to. I mean,
all I'm saying is, the Russians love to see things like this.
People are so ill from a long view. People just don't seem to be thinking straight. That's what I will say.
I don't think
the press is helping.
It's a bad advertisement for enlightened democracy.
Right. And did anyone notice that they just got the IPO going, the Aramco IPO, the Saudi IPO, boys and girls?
Sure, we're the biggest ever in the history of finance.
That's right.
World finance, absolutely. So, yeah, these are stirring times. So.
Did anyone say 9/11? I just thought I'd throw that out. Okay.
Well,
what, Saudis and 9/11, right?
All right.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say is, as Walter Cronkite used to say, and so it goes.
How about good night and have a pleasant tomorrow? Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Be back with you next week. Bye-bye.
The Media Beat with David Tereshchuk is heard on a Friday morning and rebroadcast during the weekend and during the week during our noon hour here on Robin Hood Radio.